This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the evening edition. Caroline and Uma with you. We're still talking about some of the fallout from GE14. I guess one interesting story that's been making the rounds is a consequence of the raids on the many properties or alleged properties of Najib Razak and Rosmah Mansour, where police have found, hundreds of high-end handbags.
Yep, that's right. So the Millennial actually raised an interesting question, right? How much might one of these handbags compare in value to the police investigating team's combined salary?
Right. Yeah. So, okay, just to lay it all out on the table, right? So far, the list we've seen, 52 luxury handbags, including 16 Chanel bags, 10 Gucci bags, 8 Versace bags, 5 Oscar de la Renta bags, 4 Louis Vuitton bags, 2 Prada, 2 Roberto Cavalli bags. There was also a whole bunch of, I guess, Birkins, which we know or we believe that Rosmah Mansour has a penchant towards?
That certainly is the talk about town. In regard to those, the police report, I think, mostly only mentioned the colours of the seized handbags, not their particular model or prices, the other bags certainly may reach the 10,000 ringgit mark. But where Birkins are concerned, I think that's in a different category altogether.
Oh, no, there's a huge range. Everything from 10,000 ringgit to, there was a rumour that one of the bags was auctioned off for up to 200,000. In ringgit, right? Mm. So, I mean, Birkins are a wide range, but the Malay Mail actually did some research on this. The most expensive handbag apparently that's now sold on the Gucci website is priced at $31,000.
Very painful.
Yes.
So a team of 35 police personnel of varying ranks and seniority were said to be involved in this raid. So based on past news reports of revised pay grades in 2013-2015 given out by the PSD, they did a rough sort of calculation on the possible combined salary of police investigators.
Right.
You know, using the minimum monthly wages and the likely lowest pay amongst that team could possibly come up to at least 135,130 ringgit.
Yeah, and using the maximum monthly wages from the 2015 pay schedule, it could possibly come to at least 210,975 ringgit.
Yeah, so what they're saying is how it compares, it could be anywhere from a handbag or two or more, being equivalent to, say, a team of 35 policemen's combined monthly pay.
Yeah, which is kind of insane. I love the Malay Mail for doing this story because, you know, it's stuff like this that makes it relatable and accessible. I mean, none of us can imagine touching a Birkin. Let alone,
I think we can only imagine touching.
I don't know, even imagining touching one. But, you know, a $200,000 bag is beyond our comprehension. Mm-hmm. And when you put it in hard numbers like that, and of course, a lot of us are not earning millionaire salaries.
So I think most of us are not.
Yeah, so we can all relate to these numbers, right? So we wanted to find out a little more about, I guess, Birkin bags or luxury handbags as well. So we're going to hit to the lines now where we have Azura Rahman, formerly of BFM Style File. Azura, great to have you with us. Now, help us understand the fascination that one might have with the Birkin bag. We know they come in a whole bevy of colors and sizes, but what sort of fashion statement do they actually make?
Well, I think the Hermes Birkin really came into, I suppose, mainstream folklore when it was featured in a Sex and the City episode back in the early noughties. I think Samantha had jumped the queue for the infamous waiting list by using Lucy Liu's name. And, you know, that really cemented it in history. And then you begin to see the bag being used by, you know, footballers' wives, like how Victoria Beckham was then. And, you know, to every single celebrity. And then it kind of trickled down to our own society. You can see that on any afternoon in Bangsar Shopping Centre, you'll see it dangling from many wrists. Although the bag has been around for quite a long time, actually, you know, was designed in 1983. But where we are now today, I think the bag has become more of a status symbol for wealth and a very conspicuous symbol at the same time. But to see whether it's still fashionable, well, if you see what the really big labels, you know, the very fashionable labels now, like, you know, your Gucci's, your Chloe's and your Celine's, and the kind of bags that they put out at the moment look very different from what the Hermes Birkin, which is, you know, very solid. It's meant to dangle from the crook of your arm as opposed to being worn casually. It's really not a fashion item anymore, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I wouldn't mind having one.
You wouldn't? No, not at all.
Right. So when U.S. First Lady Melania Trump, she used a crocodile Birkin when she was moving into the White House. Apparently, there was a rush to get that same bag. Do you think Rosamund Mansour might have had the same impact?
Now, it's interesting that you tried to compare the two first ladies. Now, Melania Trump herself, I think for the people who actually rushed out to get a Birkin crocodile bag after seeing her bring it into the White House are severely misinformed in terms of fashion choices. I don't think she really is a fashion icon in terms of a first lady as how Michelle Obama was, or even Nicolas Sarkozy's wife, Carla Bruni, was, or even Samantha Cameron. And at the same time, with our former Prime Minister's wife, Rosamund Mansour, to see whether it increases value or not, the kind of anecdotal things that I've been hearing from people is that, you know, those who actually own the bags, they feel a bit embarrassed to carry it now because, you know, there's so much scrutiny on the bag now and how much it costs. So people are putting things together and saying, oh, so you earn that amount of money, you can actually afford this bag? How is it that can afford such a bag? And in many ways, I think riding on the new political feeling that, you know, Malaysians have now and how they're becoming much more aware of how the elite of yesterday is no longer in favor, I would think that the progressive fashionista, anyway, wouldn't be caught dead wearing a Birkin right at this moment without wanting to cause too much of a conversation in a negative way.
Yeah. Now, do you think, Azura, that the spouses of elected officials should be allowed or expected to don these luxurious items?
I mean, of course, you know, when it comes to private citizens who want to carry whatever bag they want, you know, even if it's Kim Kardashian, whatever it is, it's fair for such people to dabble into whatever kind of fashion that they'd like because they are private citizens. Whereas the wives of politicians who are elected officials who basically are supposed to be drawing a salary that's paid for by the citizens of that country, they have to answer to the people of that country, you know? And maybe in the case of Melania Trump, obviously, you know, Donald Trump himself comes from a billionaire status before he became president of United States of America. So you can say that, yeah, you know, she owned the bag before she came to power. Whereas someone like, you know, Datin Sri Rosamund Mansour, who's the wife of a career politician who's been drawing a salary from the rakyat, when you carry a bag like that, you know, it does raise questions, especially knowing how much it costs. And of course, there's always the defense of it might have been a gift. Well, I think, you know, in the new dawn of Malaysia, we're not going to be able to put up with such reasons anymore. Gifts should be declared. You know, gifts need to be something that possibly be returned in case it's actually being viewed as a form of corruption. So I do think when it's a bag like an Hermes Birkin, of course, people are going to be asking questions, and they are right to ask questions when spouses of, you know, the premiers of countries are carrying such bags. But if it's a case of where, you know, that certain first lady or even that certain premier of that country decides to champion local labels and wear clothes by local designers. Hmm. Now, that's a different story altogether.
Right. And a good example of that is Ho Ching, the wife of Singapore's prime minister. She doesn't just avoid using high-end accessories. She also dresses in a way that intentionally downplays her status as a first lady. And it does make her a lot more likable, doesn't it?
Rightly so. I think that's exactly what somebody would want out of the wife of a premier of a country, whether it's a prime minister or president, in the sense that, you know, they're meant to support their partners and they're meant to champion certain causes, but not, you know, become totems of incredible wealth. And I think that's admirable. You want someone who is conservative and who does not flaunt any wealth that they should not be having in the first place. And hats off to her. But then, you know, you've always had these flamboyant first ladies. You know, you've got the first lady of Cameroon, for example. And, of course, you have Imelda Marcos. Terrible people to be compared to. But they make, you know, political life much more colourful in that sense. And, of course, you've had some of the ones that I mentioned earlier on, like, you know, Samantha Cameron and also Carla Bruni. They have also been able to champion the local labels, you know, Carla Bruni wore Dior all the time, for example. And at the same time, be able to carry the flag of fashion for that particular country. Samantha Cameron also championed a lot of local high street labels from the UK. So if it's something that a first lady could do, is, you know, that could be a cause that they might want to do fashion-wise.
Yeah, I think, like it or not, fashion choices that are made, particularly by women, do have the power to shape public opinion in politics.
Oh, it definitely does. I think, you know, when you see someone like Nurul Izzah Anwar, and she's been wearing the same kind of style of tudung for so many years, it sets her apart as someone who is perhaps very solid, very reliable, very dependable. And, you know, she is probably someone that you want to listen to as opposed to look at. And maybe that's what politicians should be, you know, people who do rather than just show, you know. And I think it's something that you cannot run away from, because as much as you want to break, how shall I say, a popular opinion, but the opinion goes that, you know, first impressions do matter. And of course, you know, clothes make up the man. So if you are dressed head to toe in designer labels and in status symbol items like an Hermes, Birkin, people are going to draw negative connotations from what you wear, especially if you are someone who is the wife of a publicly elected official. I think local politicians and politicians' wives, whatever it is, in Malaysia, champion batik, champion songket, champion tenun, champion all the rich local textiles that we have and the designers that we have. We have so much talent. And I think that would be a great way of making an impression by not even saying anything.
Yeah, Azura, always a pleasure having you with us. That was Azura Rahman, BFM's former host of Style File, with her thoughts on why fashion in politics can certainly make a difference. More music coming your way. Keep it right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.